The apology and the promise. The apology is, I'm so sorry. The promise is, it'll never happen again, I swear. That's all well and good until it happens again. Then what? Sometimes there's a lot going on that makes that scenario completely manipulative. Is the apology real? Is it a diversion to make you look one way while they do the same old things they've done before? I could be talking about anything and anyone right now. This scenario fits so many circumstances and all different types of relationships. Where I see it most is in emotionally abusive relationships between romantic partners or family. I have a strong opinion on apologies and promises, and I'm going to talk about it in the first segment coming up. In the meantime, if you're dealing with someone who's made the promises but doesn't commit, listen to Love and Abuse over at loveandabuse.com. That's the podcast where I help you learn to navigate difficult relationships. Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, and I want to help you learn the skills you need to deal with life's challenges in the most emotionally intelligent way. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. Always seek a professional for your mental health and well-being. So glad you joined me today. Thank you for showing up. I guess I should be okay thanking myself for showing up too. Thank you, Paul, for showing up today to make this show. I'm glad I'm here too. And I'm going to talk about what I started to talk about in the pre-roll, what they call the pre-roll of the show, where I opened the show talking about apologies and promises. And the promise is the commitment, right? You apologize and then you say, I promise I'll never do it again. This can be so taken advantage of, and it can often be used as a manipulation. We know this, right? Somebody says, I'm sorry, it'll never happen again, or I'll never do that again, and they do it again. What do you do? They did it again. Well, I have a strong opinion on this, and the reason it's strong is because I don't like to take a lot of people's BS. I don't like when somebody says one thing and does another. It can happen to any of us. We can sometimes be what's called incongruent when what you say isn't what you do, or what you think isn't what you do or say. It's when you have a commitment to something, but you choose not to commit to it. Again, we can all do this. It can be something that we have very good intentions about, but we don't do it, and it just happens. But what about people who use it as a manipulation? And this is something I do address a lot over in Love and Abuse, because what ends up happening, especially in the emotionally abusive relationship, this happens over and over again. I hear it from the victims of emotional abuse. The person that's being hurtful to them says, I'm sorry, it won't happen again. And then it happens again. And then the victim might say, well, you said it wouldn't happen again, yet here you are. And then the perpetrator says, you're right, I'm sorry, it won't happen again. I promise it won't happen again. What good is the promise if you don't follow through? It doesn't make any sense. I'm not trying to convince you of that. You know this. This is true. What good's a promise if you don't follow through? Okay, so maybe they messed up again. That happens. I messed up again. I can't believe I did it. I'm so sorry. Please, please forgive me. It'll never happen again. That's what you said last time. It's happening now. It's happening again. So it's possible. You know, you could say, I promise it'll never happen again, and it happens again. It is possible. But what about when it happens again and then you promise again? What next? Where's the accountability? And this is where the victim of a circumstance like that has to say something and mean it. Because this works on both sides. The person who says, I promise it will never happen again, has to follow through. And the other person, the victim, says, okay, it better not, or else. I'm not saying you have to use those words, but if you're the victim of something like this, the or else part, whatever you say, has to be the accountability part. It better not happen again, or what? And this is where it's so important to have a follow-through, accountability. It's so important. I know this is very obvious, but I think it needs to be said because some people, they hear, I promise it'll never happen again, over and over and over again. And then they wonder why it keeps happening. Doesn't that person care about me? They said it wouldn't happen again, but here they are, hurting me again, lying to me again, breaking their promise, breaking their commitment. How about violating the relationship contract, violating our marriage vows? Why do you keep doing this? That's the feeling the victim has. Why do you keep doing this? Don't you love me? Don't you care about me? Don't you have any morals? That's how I'd feel if it were happening to me over and over again. But it wouldn't happen to me over and over again because I wouldn't stand for it. Again, so many people know this. It's common knowledge that when something happens to you over and over again, you know, happens once, shame on you. Happens twice, shame on me. But I like to give it one extra step. Happens once, shame on you. Happens again, okay, I'll give you a little break. Happens a third time, sorry, third strike, you're out. It's over. That's it. Accountability. It doesn't mean it's over, but definitely accountability. So, like I said, I have a strong opinion on this because you shouldn't take anyone's BS over and over again. You shouldn't. I know there are circumstances, situations where you can't help it. You have to be exposed to someone like this who says, I'm sorry, and then they do it again. And then they say, I'm sorry again, and they do it again. And they just keep doing it. And when you're exposed to someone like this and you can't get away from them, well, you know, you got to put yourself in the position of acceptance. And I'm going to just go right there. Just go to acceptance. I accept that their word is not their bond. Their word is meaningless. And then once you accept that someone's word is meaningless, you stop disappointing yourself. You stop having expectations being unfulfilled. And when you have no expectations of someone, or you expect them to act in a way that you don't want, but you at least accept it, then you aren't disappointed when it happens. You just know that's who they are. You accept them for who they are. And I talk about acceptance a lot on this show, I understand. But there are circumstances where someone shows up time and time and time again, and they make all these promises, and you're hoping they'll change, and you're waiting for them to see the damage they're doing by not changing and continuing to break their promises, but they won't see it. If they've done it once, shame on them. If they've done it twice, okay, you might want to give them the benefit of the doubt or not. Totally up to you. But if it happens three times, let's put a number on it, damn it. Three times is enough. Three times? It depends on what it is, you know? If it's something very bad, like to most couples, for example, infidelity is very bad. Happens once. Shame on you. This is painful. Are we going to try to salvage the relationship? Maybe. Maybe that's your direction. It can work. It does work for a lot of couples. Some will say, shame on you, and it's over. That's it. You've destroyed my heart. You've committed emotional murder. I am devastated. This is it. It's over. I don't want you in my life anymore because I can never trust you again because I opened my heart to you. I gave it to you. I let you hold it and nurture it and care for it. And then you cheated on me. So you threw it out the window on the way to your infidelity partner. And you just didn't care. There goes your heart. Sorry. But I'm going to go enjoy my time with somebody else. I'm not putting you down if you've made this error. If you've done this in your life. I'm not judging anyone here. I'm just saying, from the victim's perspective, that's what it feels like. I call it emotional murder, because that's what it feels like. It's one of the biggest betrayals in a romantic relationship. Because when you trust someone, you give them your heart. You know it's safe in their hands. You feel vulnerable. You feel exposed, but that exposure feels safe. You feel like you've taken all of your emotional armor off because you trust this person. And then when that person betrays that trust, it just feels, it feels terrible. I remember talking to a therapist once. It wasn't therapy for me. It was an office I was renting, and she worked in that office too. And I asked her once, I said, what is the hardest, the most painful issue that you deal with people? I wanted to know. I was curious. And she said, well, next to losing a child, infidelity. And I thought, wow, really? And she said, oh yeah. In fact, some people consider infidelity a worse pain than losing a child. That blew my mind, but it doesn't surprise me, especially now after all I've learned and all I've studied, but it blew my mind back then. I thought, wow, you could have so many things that could be devastating and painful. And of course, that is devastating and painful to a lot of people. But that really put it into perspective how painful something like infidelity could be. And so, coming back to my topic, you know, the infidel apologizes and then promises never to do it again. And then you make the decision if you're going to save the relationship or not. And I do have anyone who has experienced infidelity on either side, you were the infidel or someone did infidelity in your relationship, I do have an article that talks about surviving infidelity, whether you're together or not, over at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. Just type in infidelity, and there's a few articles there, but one of them's very popular, and I think it's been helpful for a lot of people. So if you're going through that, you can check that out. But like I said, the infidel can apologize and then promise to never do it again. And of course, the article talks about that and trying to rebuild trust, trying to feel safe again around someone like that. Can the relationship survive? Like I said, yes, there are times when the relationship can survive. I'm not going to get into it too deeply now, but you know, the person who betrayed someone's trust has to rebuild that trust. And the person who violated the relationship contract, the infidel, has to feel remorse and has to be serious about never, ever doing anything like that again, and being completely transparent about where they are, who they're communicating with. And there's all kinds of criteria that I talk about in that article. So if you're dealing with that, certainly, definitely, I should say, go check that out. But coming back to the apologies and the promises, it's so important that accountability is part of this process, because someone can apologize and mean it and make a promise that they would never, that they'll never do it again and mean it. But the other person, the one who chooses to accept the apology or not, is the person who has to say, okay, if you're serious, I'll give you, and this is a choice, like I said, I'll give you one more chance. But if it happens again, X is going to happen. I'm going to do this, whatever X is. I'm going to sleep on the couch for a week. I'm going to not call you for a month. I'm going to stay at my mom's. I'm going to, you know, whatever it is. The accountability part is the most important. And I emphasize this, and I feel strongly about this, because I receive way too many messages from people who say, they've apologized and they promised to never do it again, but I'm just not sure. And I received one recently that said, you know, she said she wants to give us one more chance, but I'm not sure. Should I give her one more chance? Should I say, okay, but if you mess up again, I'm leaving. What should I do? And I think the latter is perfectly appropriate, but you have to be willing to commit. So this is where you have to walk your talk. If you say, it better not happen again, or if it happens again, your follow-through has to be your bond, your word to yourself, your commitment to you. Never mind them. Commit to yourself. If this happens again, I will do the following. This is the hard part, right? This is the hard part because maybe you live with the person. Now you have to, what, pack up your bags and, what, sell the house? I mean, what does it involve? And this is where some people have you by, how can I say this nicely, the hair. They're holding you by the head, and they are able to guide you and manipulate your head to go anywhere they want because they know that you don't want to go through the process of administering accountability. That's it right there. They know that works. A lot of people, I mean the manipulators, they know it works. The manipulator knows that they can say, I'm so sorry, I'll never do it again. And you can say, well, you better not, because it's hurtful and I'll hate you if you do it and I'll leave. You know, I'm thinking about leaving. Maybe you're not sure, but this is where the congruence is important. If you do it again, this is going to happen. I mean, hear the conviction in my voice. I'm role-playing here. If you do this again, this is going to happen. I'm not kidding. This will happen. And then when they do it again, I'm going to follow through. It may be painful, and this is another part of this. It may be super painful for you to do the accountability part because you're hoping they get it. You're hoping they commit to their promise. You know, you're hoping that their apology is actually real and not just a diversion, not just a placator, not just a delay tactic. Well, I got away with it. Now I'm just going to do it again in a few months. You know, maybe that's someone's thought process out there. I said I'm sorry, and now I'm back in their good graces, so now I'm safe for a few months. And they're going to feel more comfortable being around me, and they're going to start building or rebuilding their trust with me again. This is great, because as soon as I lock them in again, then I can get away with it again. Because they're not going to want to lose this. Taking on a narcissistic attitude here. They're not going to want to lose me because I've locked them in again. And as long as I treat them nice for a few weeks or a few months, then I will be able to get away with it again. Because they're not going to want to lose this. Plus, what are they going to do? Sell the house? What are they going to do? Get a lawyer? If it's a romantic relationship, do they want a divorce? They're not going to want to do all that. I know it will be hard for them. For example, they could say, I make more money, so they're not going to want to go through that. They're not going to want to be broke. So I can pretty much get away with it. I hope my role playing is making an impact, and it's probably an unhappy impact in your mind if this is happening to you, because this is very, very real for a lot of people. They're in a situation where they say, Paul, I want to provide accountability, but I really can't because they hold the reins. They're my support system. I can't get away from that. I totally get it. I understand. This is why there needs to be some level of accountability, even if it's not a full disconnect. Sometimes you can't get a full disconnect. You can't just sell the house and go live with somebody else. You might not be able to do that. So this is where you figure out what is important to them, and the accountability is losing what's important to them. In a romantic relationship, it might be the other person wants to have sex once a week, once a month, or whatever it is, and you might have to take that away as accountability. And if they whine and complain and moan about it, I'm sorry, I told you. This is my promise to you. I'm keeping my promise to you. I told you there would be accountability. If you can't keep your promise to me, I will keep my promise to you. So this isn't happening. What? You're packing up and going to live with your sister? What? Don't do that. Come on. Come on. Just come on back. Please, please come on back. Please. I'm doing a lot of role playing today, but I want to get this point across that there are people out there that will beg, that will plead, that will promise you over and over again, and then they don't follow through. So those people, you have to put it in the filing cabinet of your mind that if they've broken the promise once, they haven't committed, shame on them. Maybe give them another chance. Totally up to you. If they've broken it twice, this is my rule. Doesn't have to be your rule, but my rule is, you broke it twice, this is unacceptable. If it happens again, this is it. It's over. So the second one is kind of their last chance. This is your last chance. Because if it happens again, my rule is strike three, you're out. I like that rule because it keeps my life clean of toxic behavior. Doesn't mean I never experience it. I don't get that, fortunately, from my relationships, because everyone that's been toxic, I don't have around me. I don't want to deal with them. I don't want to have them in my life. But at the same time, I consider myself lucky. Like, I moved 1,000 miles away from home, not because my family's toxic. Actually, only one person is really toxic, and some people I'd rather not see. Not only my family, but other people. But, you know, I moved away because I wanted to experience life in other parts of the country. I didn't want to be stuck in my own home state forever. And I traveled. I traveled around the U.S. and found different places to live, and I enjoyed it. Different places to work, different places to live, met different people. And I'm now more worldly, about 10%. I'm now a little bit more worldly. And that has helped me reach new limits in my understandings and my perceptions. But I move away, and there are toxic people where I used to live. And if I was living there still, I would probably run into those toxic people. So I am lucky. I'm lucky that I'm not around those people. And moving to a new place where toxic family doesn't exist, again, only have one or two, they don't exist down here, so there's no chance I'll run into them. So I consider myself lucky. Of course, I took the steps to make myself lucky, but not everyone has that ability to do so or means, and I understand that. So I'm not saying that, hey, just do this and you'll be fine. I'm saying that I understand that you can't always just do this and be fine. You can't always say this is going to be the accountability, but you should find something that makes someone accountable if they're the type of person that likes to break their commitment. And again, I see this mostly in emotionally abusive relationships. And when I see it, I tell the person receiving a promise like that to look at the trend line. Has this happened before? Do they promise and not follow through? Because if it has, don't expect anything different going forward. That's unfair because some people do change. But what ends up happening is when the accountability is big enough, impactful enough, and a big enough loss, it makes such a huge impact on certain people that they finally get it. They finally understand that their behavior is that bad. And when they get to that point, it's like they snap out of a trance. Their trance is, nothing I'm doing is that bad. They'll be fine. That's their trance. I was in that trance at one time in my life. My trance was, well, she's still here. We'll be fine. That was in my romantic relationships. Well, I did this and she cried, and but we got past it. So we'll be fine. So my trance was just always believing everything would be fine no matter how bad I got, no matter how hurtful I was, no matter how much I made them feel guilty. And you know, I did certain things in my past I'm definitely not proud of. But now hindsight is 20/20, and I remember how I used to be and who I used to be, and I tell myself, you were a jerk. I look at myself and I think, wow, I have no inclination to be that person ever again. That is somebody I don't even recognize today. What a jerk. I had great qualities and I had terrible qualities, like a pendulum swing. You're a jerk half the time and you're a nice guy half the time. Well, that's not very conducive to a happy relationship. So that's when I started healing and learning about myself, because I kept losing relationships, on and on and on. But I learned that a good relationship requires congruent communication, congruent commitment, being someone of integrity, and caring about someone you love. And I mean, there's a lot more to it, but I realized that when you're in this trance that I'm talking about, where you just think, they'll be fine. it's not always the case. In fact, most of the time, if not always, you are creating a wedge in the relationship. If you think they'll be fine, even though I hurt them, there's a wedge created. In fact, that wedge can be there for the entirety of the relationship if the relationship lasts. And this is the trouble, is that sometimes we believe that it's not bad enough, so we just keep doing what we're doing. And that's how a relationship degrades. And so with the apology and the promise, it's important that the person making the apology and making the promise is 100% going to follow through. But it's also just as important for the person receiving the apology and the promise that they follow through too. 100%. At least at some level, even if it's a small level of accountability. You may not be able to move out, but what can you do? What is a loss to them? Then, you know, pick your battles wisely. Some people aren't worth fighting. And learn to accept those who don't change. And then ask yourself, is it okay that this person stays this way forever and I stick around? That's a good question. Because as soon as you accept that someone is not going to change, whether they change in the future or not, they are not their potential. You still have to create some level of accountability. That's all I'm saying. So no matter what, even if you think that there is a chance that they'll change, without accountability, there is no reason to change. And that makes the world go round. If we put our hand in the fire and the fire burns our hand, we probably won't do it again, not intentionally. But if you put your hand in the fire over and over again, people are going to start looking at you wondering, why do you keep putting your hand in the fire? The analogy is when somebody is mistreating you and made a promise to not mistreat you anymore and tells you that they'll never do it again, how often are you going to put your hand in that fire by allowing them to do it over and over and over again? So I am okay giving someone one chance and then another, but not the third one. Two chances, third strike, you're out. May not be your rule, but make a rule. Make your criteria. This is the most important part. You have to make your rule for what is allowed, what is acceptable and not acceptable. These are boundaries. This is my boundary. If you cross this line, that's it. There's pain involved here too, because some people, you know, you love. I love this person. Why do they keep doing it? Yes, it can hurt with certain people. If it's a romantic partner, it can hurt to say, hey, third strike, you're out, I'm leaving, because you might be in love. And what do you do about the fear of abandonment if you're dealing with that, or fear of rejection if you're dealing with that? What do you do about the commitments and all the connections that you have together? And there's so much involved, I get it. But you have to start somewhere. You have to have some level of accountability in place so that you can say, I told you if it happened, and here it is, and I'm not going to accept it. This shows a lot of self-respect, a lot of self-compassion, self-love. It shows that you are worthy. It shows it. You are telling yourself you are worthy. This is why it's more of a commitment to yourself. It's more of a promise to yourself. And what ends up happening, especially in difficult relationships, is that when the other person breaks their promises and continues to be hurtful or continues to do the things that they said they wouldn't do, you feel it inside you almost as if you broke the promise to yourself. I told myself that I wouldn't allow this again, and here it is. And this begins dissolving your own worth. This begins dissolving who you are inside. I hope you're not dealing with that. I hope you haven't dealt with that, but I know there's a lot of people that have, and maybe you're dealing with it now. There are people that are listening right now that feel this. They feel what I'm talking about. And it's a painful place because you can literally feel this physically, this slow degradation of who you are. This is the epitome of becoming a shell of your former self. So this is why the promises and the congruence is very important inside of you. Both sides of this, both people have to promise and keep that commitment. If at all possible. Yes, there are extenuating circumstances, but you know, this is why you have three strikes and not two, in my opinion. So I hope this gives you something to work on or chew on, or maybe you already knew this and you didn't need any of this, but I just had to get this out there because I know there are a lot of people that have been dealing with this and maybe needed a little push. I don't know if this pushed you to do anything, but I hope it helps you think about things. We'll be right back after this. This is week, three, four? I think it's four. So it's been 4 weeks since I started using one of today's sponsors. Very cool, very innovative devices. It's Fisher Wallace's neurostimulator. And I'm here to say that there's a literal night and day difference in my sleep on the nights I don't use it. Sometimes I don't even know how relaxed I am until I take it off and I don't even want to get out of bed to put it away. I'm talking about Fisher Wallace Labs' FDA-approved device made specifically for the treatment of insomnia, anxiety, and depression. If you've been listening to my updates on this device, you've heard me talk about how it not only helps me fall asleep, but stay asleep long after I'm done with it. I yawn when I'm done using it, and so I'm ready to sleep. And I'm usually never ready for sleep before my girlfriend. She always beats me to it. But now that I'm using this thing, I'm saying goodnight and she's still reading the news. Yes, we read the news in bed. I know. Fisher Wallace stands behind their neurostimulation device by offering a 100% satisfaction guarantee that allows you to return it within 30 days for a full refund. This thing just does what it's supposed to do. So go to FisherWallace.com/overwhelmedbrain and use the coupon code BRAIN during checkout to save 10% on your device today. It's a long one. FisherWallace.com/overwhelmedbrain. Promo code BRAIN saves you 10%. 81% of U.S. online job seekers search for jobs on Indeed each month, according to ComScore. 81%! I remember using it myself looking for work way back when. It was my go-to resource every day. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. You don't have to hope the right person shows up anymore. You don't have to spend hours on multiple job sites. Indeed is your powerful hiring partner that can help you do it all. And probably one of the best things about Indeed, something I know you'll truly appreciate, is that when you pay to post a job, Instant Match shows you candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post. Even better, Indeed's the only job site where you only pay for applications that meet your must-have requirements. There's a reason 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at indeed.com/TOB, like the overwhelmed brain, T-O-B. Offer is good for a limited time, so claim your $75 credit now at indeed.com/TOB. That's indeed.com/TOB. Terms and conditions apply. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Welcome back. I'm going to address an email that I received, and I'm not going to read it to you. It is basically someone who was in a relationship with someone, and he was, I guess, he lied a lot, and he was on drugs, and he cheated, and so they went their separate ways. And she got into an abusive relationship, and he changed his ways, and he was doing well, and they reconnected many years later. And he told her how he really felt about her, and she felt the same way, but she was in a relationship and decided to stay in that relationship, even though it was abusive, because for many reasons. There's a lot of reasons people don't leave abusive relationships or can't leave abusive relationships, but she stayed there for a while, and then he went off and got into another relationship and had a child, and I don't know if they're happily ever after or not, but it was a lengthy email, so that's why I gave you the summary. But she asked, is it possible to reconnect with this person sometime in the future? Should I keep hope that we're going to reconnect someday, or that something could happen between us? And I think she asked, if we did reconnect, would this be something that could flourish? most of that question is actually a crystal ball question. I do not know the answer to. And the second part of that question is something like that. Can it flourish? The simple answer is yes, it can. You can have a relationship with someone that may have changed their ways. You know, we were talking about the last segment. I promise I'll change. It sounds like he did. It sounds like this person changed. And now he's a different person and he has feelings or had feelings for you. But then you didn't reconnect at that time. So now you have different lives. So her question is about if we do reconnect, is it possible something like this could flourish again, could become something good? And the answer is yes. But I don't want you to keep hope for something like that. I don't want you to keep thinking about it. And this is going to be the hard part. If you keep thinking about it, like, this could happen, this may happen, I want this to happen, then you might end up taking the time and energy away from your present. Now you may say, but I'm single now. This could happen. You could be single now, and I would like this. So why can't I think about that? Absolutely. You can think about that. And, you know, when I say this, you don't really have to listen to me. You don't have to do anything I say. I'm just giving my suggestion, giving my perspective, and telling you probably the healthiest way to go about this. If you think about it often, I guess it's okay. But if you obsess about it, and it takes up a lot of time and energy, and you are exploring his social media pages, you are waiting impatiently by the phone all the time, then what ends up happening is that a lot of time and energy is taken away from what you could be doing today. Does that mean you should get into another relationship? It doesn't mean anything. I like to look at it this way. This may be a morbid question, but if he was not alive, what would you do then? Like, he was off the table. This is how I solve problems in my mind when there's some sort of obsession. I mean, if you have any type of obsessive thinking, I actually cover that in a couple of really detailed episodes at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. Just look up the word obsess. But if you have any type of obsessive thinking, then what you do is take the object of your obsession off the table. And then ask yourself, what would I think or do then? So if I were single and I was obsessed with this person, you know, I saw a person or I knew a person that I saw every now and then, and I was so obsessed, I wanted to be with them, but they didn't want to be with me, but I couldn't help thinking about them, and I just couldn't get them out of my mind. That's the direction I would take. I would tell myself, okay, imagine this person is no longer here. They died. Now what? I have to wrap my head around that first because my thoughts were so obsessive. I couldn't stop thinking about them. But when the object of my obsession is no longer in the picture, what does my brain do then? What do I do with my life? When you do something like this, when you take the object of your obsession off the table, you get to find out how much time your mind was occupied on that obsession. And you also get to learn what you think and what you do when that object of your obsession is no longer the obsession. It's gone. So what do you do now? And so the only reason I bring that up for this person is because I want to make sure that there is a focus on today, what you're doing today, what you can do today, without this other person involved. Now, that doesn't mean you can't reconnect, or if you even want to stay friends, if you can, and if that's an opportunity, if that's available. It's up to him and it's up to you, of course. But if you can't stop obsessing about it, that's when it starts taking up too much time in your life and starts replacing what you can and maybe should be doing in the present moment. If you have kids, your time and energy is taken away from the kids, typically, at least when it comes to deeper obsessions. If you have a job, your job can be affected. You know, your work can be affected by obsessive thoughts. So I am taking you in this direction just to make sure that you do focus on today, the here and now, and you may already be doing this. You know, maybe you'll tell me that, no, this is what I do already. I just wondered if we reconnected in the future that it could be something. And, you know, the answer is yes, it could be. The answer could also be no. The answer could also be you could get together and it'd be great for 3 years and then it's terrible after that. The problem is with thinking like this is that any possibility is there. Every single potentiality is possible. And when you have all these routes of possibility available to you, then you go into an infinite loop of thinking, which then can also be obsessive as well. We typically obsess about what we want and it working out. That's our typical obsession. I want this so much. I hope it works out. I want this thing. I want this person. I want this job. I want this money. And I hope it works out. And we obsess because it's just cyclical thinking. We keep going back to the thoughts that we are having, and we want those thoughts to come true. Typically, there are exceptions, but obsessive thinking, it takes up a lot of gray matter in your brain. So we have to be careful about that. If you go into obsessive thinking, take the object of the obsession out of the picture so that you can come back into the present and ask yourself, what do I do now? What should I do now? What can I do now? What am I thinking about now? Now, let me get back to the question at hand. And I know I've already answered it, but I'm going to give you probably a more direct answer now. My more direct answer is yes and no, it might not. And you might get together and find out that you still trigger each other. So this is one of those any potentiality is possible. This is one of those it could go any way, in any direction. And in her email, she said, you know, I have really strong feelings for him. And the last time he said it, he has strong feelings for me too. Maybe I won't have these feelings for anyone else. I gotta stop you there if that's your thought process, because let me put it this way. In every relationship I've been in, probably 5 long-term relationships, and hopefully this is the last one, but in every one, I thought that I would never, ever feel the way I did toward this person about anyone else. Feel the way I did about this person. Yeah. I thought I would never feel the same way that I felt about this person. And here's the truth. I didn't. I never felt the same way about the person I used to be with and the new person I'm with. Meaning, I felt one way about the last partner, and then I felt a different way about the next partner. And there were things I missed about the last partner. There were things I felt about the last partner that I didn't get with the next partner. This is normal. This is supposed to be the way it is because everyone's different. I look at love as supporting someone else's path to happiness, and I look at being in love as loving how you feel when you're with someone. That's, you know, my simple definitions. I'm sure people disagree with it, but I look at being in love as loving how you feel when you're with someone. It's a little bit more complex, but that's how I look at it. I love how I feel when I'm with my girlfriend. That tells me I'm in love. I was in love with my other partners, my other girlfriends over the years, and I loved how I felt with them too. I loved how it felt to do things together. I loved how it felt holding their hands. I loved how it felt being intimate. I loved how it felt just sitting around the house with them. Everything that made me feel good reminded me I was in love. And then the stuff that I wasn't so fond of, oh, like they have these little quirks, or they don't do what I want them to do, you know, when I was more controlling. I didn't love that, but I was still in love. But my point is, you can love how you feel with the right person, and the right person just has to fit your criteria and maybe have a lot of values in common. And if you like the same things and you do the same things and you enjoy being together, then the more everything works out, the more compatible you are, or at least the more you get along, and the more they show love and support toward you, you'll love how you feel. And when you love how you feel, I think that is a great qualifier for a relationship. I mean, let's talk about emotional abuse again. Emotionally abusive relationships, I'll hear from the victim of emotional abuse, and they always say how bad they feel. I feel sad. I feel angry. I feel like I can't communicate with the other person. I feel guilty. I feel responsible for all the relationship problems. That is a terrible feeling. That is not the good feeling of being in love. That's just trying to survive. That's a survival feeling. And it's mixed with the hope that love will be good again, and that you can feel good about yourself again. And so the reason I'm telling you this is because we meet people that help us feel good about ourselves. And when they do, that can lead to being in love if it's romantic. If it's not romantic, it's, you know, it's a different story. There are people that can make you feel good about yourself, and they could be good friends. They could be good family. But when it's romantic, we can meet people that make us feel this way, and it'll be completely different than how somebody else made us feel. But it can still be good. Meaning, you could have had the best love of your life 10 years ago, or 20 years ago. This person wrote 10 years ago is not good. But just think about the best love of your life, and you think, oh, I'm never going to have that feeling again. But then you meet someone new, and you don't have that same feeling again, but you're not the same person. There's no way, I'm sorry to say, there's no way you're going to have that same feeling again, because there were different criteria being met inside you. There were different criteria being met back then. And today, what is your criteria? What do you require to feel good about yourself, to feel happy, to love another person, to feel good in a relationship, to feel comfortable, to feel safe, to feel like you could be yourself, to feel vulnerable, to feel exposed, and still feel happy and even at peace sometimes, knowing that the other person's not going to explode at the drop of a hat. I mean, there are ways that other people can make us feel that allow us to feel good about ourselves, or nervous or awkward or anxious or all kinds of things. So I'm giving you all this as a roundabout outline to make sure that you understand that just because you met the, quote, love of your life, or you believe they are the love of your life, doesn't mean somebody else won't come along and make you feel not only just as good or different, but even better. This is something that helped me. This line of thinking helped me during my divorce. I got divorced, I don't know, almost a decade ago. And when I was going through it, I was miserable. I was sad, and I was just mopey. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I had a lot of healing to do because I was grieving. And one day or one night, I was just thinking to myself, you know, okay, what if I met someone else? You know, what if I met someone else and she was great? Yeah, but she's not my wife. That's my thought. She wasn't my wife made me feel this, and my wife liked to watch sci-fi with me, and my wife liked this, and we did all this stuff together. There'll never be anyone like her. That was my thought. And then I thought something else, and this is, I guess, the way my brain works. I said, well, what if you met someone else who was nothing like your wife, but she made you laugh, and she was attractive? I mean, my wife was attractive, but I'm just saying she was attractive in a different way, you know, a different person has a different type of attraction. And she was intelligent, and you liked to talk with her, and you had great conversation. And it was pretty much the same, you know, with your wife and her, except there were differences. You know, your wife liked this, but this person likes that. How would you feel then? And I said, yeah, well, it's still not my wife. So that thought came to my mind, and I thought, well, if it's just a parallel transition, it's not going to really inspire me to make me feel better. So I came up with another question. What would happen if you met someone new who not only was as attractive as your wife, but even more so, and not only loved to laugh, but made you laugh more than you did with your wife, who found you sexy or found you sexier than your wife did and found you intelligent or more intelligent than your wife did? What if she gave you everything your wife did plus more? And that stopped me in my tracks. That was like somebody lit a match in a dark room. And I said, wait a minute, what are you asking? And I thought, I don't understand, because my mind started spinning a little bit. You're asking me if I met someone like my wife, but different, and not only was everything just as great, but better, would I be okay with that? Would that be good? And my answer was almost too obvious. Yes, of course, I would love that. And when I said that, I realized, oh, wait a minute, that could actually happen. I allowed that potentiality into my reality. I allowed that as one of the thought processes I needed to have. Because my obsessive thinking was, oh, I'll be miserable, I'm going to be unhappy, my marriage ended and this was supposed to last for the rest of my life, and I'm just a loser because I lose all my relationships. And then I asked myself that question and it became a potential, it became a possibility. And that brightened my spirits. Because what if that's true? And that allowed me to get past a certain line of thinking, just like I'm directing this person who wrote, I'm directing her into a line of thinking that, yes, you could have this relationship and reconnect and everything could go great. And you could also have this relationship and everything starts off great and then it fizzles out really fast. And you could have this relationship and you immediately start triggering each other because this is what you used to do. And he starts drinking again. I mean, there are all kinds of possibilities, potentials. And you could also meet someone else and have a relationship that's not just as good as what you had, but better. And from what you described, your relationship was never that great in the first place. You just have different feelings after so many years. And if you were to get together again, yes, it's possible. But you could also meet someone where you don't have a tumultuous history. You could meet someone where you didn't have that kind of history, and maybe they make you feel as good as you did with this other person or better. Maybe they are just as attractive as this other person or better. Maybe they make you laugh just like this other person or more. Maybe you feel loved and supported and high on a pedestal because they look up to you and they admire you and they respect you. And maybe this other person could have done that too, and maybe this new person could do it even more. So there's a way of looking at things that can help you out of thinking that may keep you in a rut. And again, I'm not saying this is easy, because if you're obsessed about it and you just can't stop thinking about it and it has to be that person, then that's what happens. You end up staying in that rut. In fact, I forgot about this part of the thought process I did back then. But that was my question. Like, if I met someone who was not only as attractive, but more, not only as fun to be with, but more, not only found me sexy, but more, not only, you know, XYZ, but more, and her name wasn't my wife's name, would I be okay with that? I actually put my wife's name in there because my obsessive thinking was, it has to be my wife saying her name. It has to be her. It has to be her, and if it's not her, then I'll be unhappy. I just stuck that name in there as a qualifier, and if it wasn't her, her name and her as a person, then it couldn't be anyone else, and that's it, period. I'm not going to think outside that box because I know it has to be her. That's how foggy we can get sometimes. We believe that out of the billions of people on Earth, it has to be that one that we connected with at one time. I mean, it's kind of silly when you think about it, and I'm not putting you down for it, because I was this way myself, but it is kind of silly to think about, we connected with that one person, and it can only be that one person again, when there are billions of personalities and people and sizes and shapes and colors on this earth that we have yet to experience. Yeah, but Paul, it's so hard to find someone. I know. I hear you. Yet, does it have to be that person? We don't want to limit our thinking to a single individual and make that our only source of happiness or comfort or joy or feeling sexy or feeling safe. We don't want to make one person the center of our world. And if you're with one person who is the center of your world, I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but I am saying you probably shouldn't. It's nice to have them in your world, and it's nice to be with them, and it's nice to share everything with them. Absolutely. Be vulnerable. Be yourself. And also have a life. Be yourself. And who are you without them? Because if you lose yourself because of someone else or with someone else, then happiness wanes. If you lose yourself or a part of yourself, you start disintegrating yourself, and that affects you at the deepest levels. So you don't want to make a single person your sole source of energy and happiness and peace and comfort and the reason for living itself. You don't want to do that. You don't want to do that because it wears you down. And what do you do if they're gone for a few days? What do you do when they want to do something for themselves and you're not involved? I mean, I'm hoping that most people that are listening now have a healthy enough balance in their life where they can be around someone else and be themselves and not have their sole focus on what they need to do for the other person or how they need to be for the other person, how they need to act. You should be able to show up for the most part as yourself, because if you don't, you wear yourself out, and that really starts to build resentment and maybe even regret, and it just wears you down. So to the person who wrote that message, thank you so much. I know this is tough if you have these thoughts about someone and now that person's going on with their life and what do you do? Well, anything's possible, and you could find the perfect person tomorrow or you could be with him again, but don't focus so much on one person as fulfilling something that's empty inside of you, because you need to be as whole as you can without wanting someone else to, quote, complete you. I think someone else can be very fulfilling and very satisfying to have in your life and be a big part of your life. And you and me make us, so we have three entities in the relationship, but don't make them the sole provider of your energy and your happiness and the joy of who you are and who you can be. And if you don't feel joyous, it's going to take some work. I know there are sometimes we need to go through healing and get through some old unresolved emotions. So you may have to do that too. But I don't know. I hope this is helpful to you and you're able to move through life knowing that anything's possible. But try not to focus so much on something that may or may not be, because you might miss out on what's right in front of you, including yourself. Don't miss out on who you are and who you want to be. Because when you bring yourself into the world, the best kind of people that show up in your life are the ones that appreciate you for who you are. And someone who accepts you for your authenticity is probably someone you want to keep around. That could be this other guy. Don't know. But don't make it your only focus. It may happen someday, but don't let it affect your decisions. Meaning, if you want to stay around in town just in case he is available again, then that's affecting your decision. That's why I say take the object of your obsession out of the picture, off the table, and make decisions based on that. Because that is the most fulfilling life. Then maybe you'll meet up again someday, maybe not, but at least you've lived a life that you can look back and say, I'm glad I didn't allow that to steer me in a certain direction, and I'm glad I made decisions based on what I wanted to do with my life, because I believe that's the way to live the most fulfilling life. Thanks for writing, and thanks for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I appreciate you. We'll be right back with my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our patrons this week: Anna, Leela, Adriana, Christy, Chelsea, Deborah, Vanessa, Veronica, Holly, Allison, not one word, Holly and Allison, Harriet, And Andreas, thank you so much, patrons. They are the financial donors of the show, the patrons, and there are new names every week, or new names to the show, different names every week. They are the monthly supporters of the show. Thank you so much for your support, patrons. I appreciate each and every one of you. You are very, very kind. And if you find value in the show and you want to give back, head over to moretob.com, where you can have options there to give back and also see what the patron program is all about. Thank you, patrons. I am grateful. And for a show on how to deal with difficult relationships, you've heard me mention it maybe once or twice, go to loveandabuse.com. That's where I help you navigate the challenges and the difficulties of a relationship with a difficult person. It can be very helpful to you. And if you are the one, you are the difficult person that maybe wants to change that about yourself, and you find yourself hurting someone you care about, head over to healedbeing.com, where I created a course that is literally changing lives and improving relationships and doing a lot for the people that are in the support groups and reading the lessons. Healedbeing.com. It's something I've been working on for about a year and a half, and it outlines what you need to do to change from being hurtful to being supportive and loving. And you can read all about it there, healedbeing.com. And I just wanted to let you know that if you have reviewed the show, like on iTunes or other podcast sites, I do try to read all of them. So don't think that your reviews are going unread. I am definitely reading them, and I'm definitely feeling good and sometimes feeling bad because somebody will hear me say something, not like it, and give me one star for the entire 9 years that I've been doing the show. That's unfortunate. I see that, and it's disappointing because they probably heard something they didn't agree with and thought, well, that's who this guy is, I'm leaving. And that's certainly their opinion, and I respect that. I do appreciate the other reviews, though, and I do read them. And thank you so much for somebody who said, hits the nail on the head, and another person said, can't thank you enough. And they described their abusive relationship, and they said, what I do matters here, and that helps me. So whenever I see a negative review and then I see a positive review, fortunately the positive reviews far outweigh the negative, and that makes me feel good. So I'm just saying thank you. I'm not saying you have to go review the show or anything like that. I'm just saying thank you. Thank you so much for the words, because I'm reading them and it makes me feel good. I even have a special page on my website that when I read a good review, then I'll copy it and put it on that page, so I have them all together on that one site, just in case I need a pick-me-up, and it does help. Thank you so much. I appreciate everyone that leaves reviews. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And I'm just going to say quickly that, you know, I talked about forgiveness and apologies and commitments and things like that today. I do have episodes on forgiving and apologies and my view on forgiveness and should you forgive? Is it supposed to be something that you should do so that you can move past it? I always look at forgiveness as forgiving yourself. And if you've heard me say it, you've probably heard me use the term forgiving yourself a break for how you showed up back then. Because usually when something happens, if we feel like we have to forgive someone else, there might be a little bit of anger or regret inside of us because we feel like we should have seen it, or we feel like we shouldn't have gotten duped. So it's important to forgive ourselves, which is why I like to say just forgive yourself a break, because you didn't know back then, otherwise you wouldn't have done it. You didn't know what was going to happen, or if you did know, you didn't realize the impact that it would have on their life or your life. You didn't know. You did the best you can. And this is a really obscure reference, but I'm going to use it anyway. I'll never forget the line in the original movie Tron, 1982. I think it's 82. And I was a kid, and it just wowed me. Like, Tron, wow, he's inside a computer. Oh, my God. And so the outside world, outside the computer, they're known as users. They're still known as users. We are users of a computer. In the inside world, they're programs. And so Tron, the original movie, and also the sequel, it addresses this. But inside Tron, the programs are people inside the computer. Well, they're represented as people. They're personalities. And they are the representation of the person who programmed them. I know it sounds a little silly if you have never seen this, but If you have and you were crazy about electronics and computers when you were a kid, then this movie was the bomb in a good way. So the whole idea behind the movie was this user in the outside world got transported into the computer in the inside world. And he wanted to find out, or he wanted to reveal some information about the real world so that he can clear his name and get his copyrights back on some video games he created. I'm not going to get into the whole story, but there's a point where the user, Kevin, meets these programs, and the programs are like, oh my God, you're a user. And to the programs, the users are gods. And so one of the programs said, well, if you're here, you must have a plan. And Kevin says, you wish. You know what it's like. You just keep doing what it looks like you're supposed to be doing, no matter how crazy it seems. And then the program says, well, that's the way it is for programs, yes. And Kevin says, well, I hate to disappoint you, but most of the time, that's the way it is for us too. I don't have a plan. And that really stuck with me. I know, again, it's a weird reference, but it really stuck with me because here's somebody that everyone looked to, or the programs looked to as a god. He must know what he's doing. He's smart. He's a user. He programs us. He must know everything. And he comes in and says, no, I really don't know anything. I'm just doing what I can. I'm just trying to figure things out. The reason I reference that is because that's how I feel. And that's how we have to look at things sometimes, is that we're just trying to do the best we can to figure things out, knowing what we know. Which is why I say, give yourself a break. If you made a mistake, or you feel like you need to forgive someone else, or, you know, whatever happened in the past, you weren't the same person. You couldn't be. Because if you were, it wouldn't have happened. Because if you knew the consequences of that, you probably wouldn't have done the same things. You probably wouldn't have turned left when you should have turned right. You probably wouldn't have gone to that person's house that one day. You probably wouldn't have eaten that ham and cheese sandwich if you knew it was going to make you sick. You don't know these things until you do them. And so, be gentle on yourself. You didn't know. And even if you thought you should have been smart enough, obviously you weren't. You were smart, probably, but you didn't know the consequences of that particular thing, and you thought otherwise. You just thought otherwise. And so, give yourself a break. Don't worry about the past so much that you're obsessed about it. And if you keep obsessing about it and you can't get past it, of course, listen to the other episodes I have at theoverwhelmedbrain.com about obsession, and that'll help you out as well. And of course, forgiveness and apologies. And that should be something that you need to get past, because whatever you're carrying around today is a hindrance to your progress. Meaning, if you have some sort of unresolved trauma, I'm not saying you can't be successful or progress, but if you have it, it's certainly a hindrance. It's certainly something that can slow you down. It can even be in the way of your happiness. So even if you do reach the highest level of success or personal growth and development or whatever you're shooting for, even if you reached the highest level, if you have that unhealed stuff inside of you, you may not be able to experience the fulfillment and the level of happiness that you definitely deserve. So this is why I always want to work on myself. I always tell you this is something that you need to look inside of yourself and make sure you keep working on it. And don't be upset if you can't fix yourself or heal yourself. You're just trying to do the best you can. Like Kevin and Tron, you're just doing what you can. You're trying to figure it out as you go along. And then when you get some new resource or tool, it can help you out. It can change things for you. It can make you happier. It can make you more comfortable. And you continue doing that, and you continue traveling the path that brings you to your destination, whatever that destination is. So if a user in the computer world who knows how to program programs can't figure things out, you should give yourself a break. You should be gentle on yourself, because you didn't know everything back then, and you still don't know everything now, and you're still going to make mistakes, and you're still going to do things that maybe 20 years from now you'll think, damn it, I should have done something different. It's just going to happen. Just know that that's normal, and it sucks, and you do your best to make sure it doesn't happen again. by committing to yourself to improving the areas that you don't feel very strong in, and healing the areas that need healing. And just keep working on it. I'm still working on it. I'm still doing this myself. I've been doing this show a long time, and I talk about how to heal and how to increase your self-worth and self-esteem. And it's always a work in progress. And that's perfectly okay, because I feel like that's my purpose. That's my journey. My journey is the work in progress. My purpose is this journey. My purpose is to continually improve myself and work on myself. And I guess also spread the word. This is my purpose with you, to spread the word just in case you need it. And if you don't, I'm just going to ask you to keep an open mind. This is how you step into your power so that you get to create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.